again, you're listening to FM 102, Cable 102, CITR, and the Nardwuar, the Human Serviette Radio Show. Today on the Nardwuar, the Human Serviette Radio Show, an interview with Chris Murphy of Sloan. On the Nardwuar, the Human Serviette Radio Show.
And you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar to Human Serviette Radio Show. If you listened last week, you might have heard me speaking to Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan. Well, he's back again this week. How the hell are you, Chris?
Hey, Nardwuar, we have some unfinished business.
Thank you again for coming into my show last week. I really appreciate that.
I had a great time, and the show was super fun, too, that show that we played. And the rain stopped.
Oh, I had a few more questions. Is it okay if I ask you those?
Yes.
I just was wondering, Chris, we were talking a little bit about putting on something at Olympic Island. And again, you were Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan. Could you explain a bit about the Olympic Island gig that you put together? Because this is like a giant gig. I always ask you about the Olympic Island, just like I always ask you about the metal guy over and over again. But this Olympic Island gig that you put on was pretty cool. Do you have any advice for anybody putting on something like this? This was a giant gig that happened in Toronto.
Well, it was sort of a melding of a couple of worlds that we sort of live in, but they seldom sort of come together. Like, we go to shows, Jay even more so than I, go to shows of a lot of bands that, you know, whether it's Death from Above or this type of thing, and or smaller bands that you don't hear about or that don't have agents or that don't even put out records sometimes. And then we go to a lot of these shows, but when we play in Toronto, we end up playing at some big place, and we only play about once every 18 months, and we're not really part of the scene, you know, anything really that happening. And we moved to Toronto as sort of an established band, and we didn't kind of come up through the ranks with any bands. And, you know, a lot of bands that have gone on to do well, you know, have played with us, you know.
You've thought about a lot for this answer. This last week, you've really been thinking about answering this question that we didn't really get to last week.
Well, you were really upset when it ended, so because the news team of 10 people came in and kicked us out, and you.
They gave us extra time, actually.
No,
they gave
I know.
Us extra time.
I know.
And we wished them all the luck in the world.
Yeah,
the
that was me.
Newscast.
That was me complaining. You're a very gracious person. Anyway, so you know, we were very happy to be able to play with a couple of those groups that we normally don't get to play with. Because the thing is, you know, we're trying to be, you know, a professional group that plays and gets paid and that kind of thing, as opposed to a band that has fun. But this was a chance for us to sort of have fun and see other bands. Although, for most of the day, I was just talking to, like, dorky people and not even watching bands. But we were really happy to sort of
well, my question to you was,
to bring it
all
together.
You got Sam Roberts to do it, and that probably satisfied all the agents.
Yes.
What were the other names of headliners around that you may have had to resort to get people out? Like Finger 11. And I remember once I asked you, did you ever play with the Rainbow Butt Monkeys, which was pre-Finger 11, and you got mad that I actually thought that you played with the Rainbow Butt Monkeys.
Well, we played with Finger 11. We played with... You name a crappy Canadian band, and we've probably played with them. But
you did get mad when I accused you of playing with the Rainbow Butt Monkeys.
Do you know my joke about, here they come walking down the street, they get funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the Rainbow Butt Monkeys, and people say we rainbow butt monkey around.
I'm actually quite into them these days because I found out they did some tours with Bootsauce.
We opened for Bootsauce.
You played with... Did everybody play with Bootsauce? This is like an important band for Canadian can rock. You have not been the same, or Chris Murphy.
You... Pardon? You have not been the Samer?
Yeah. Because that's that book that came out.
Yeah.
And it's thick, and it's got you in the cover. And, like, the thesis should be, if you play with Bootsauce, you're going to make it. The Fingers made it, and you made it.
Yeah,
the Bootsauce.
Do you know my joke about that book? They asked me to write, something for the jacket of that book. And there is something I think I said on there, but it's something bland. But the original thing that I said on there is, we'll be the only band to be in the sequel of this book.
Except for Bootsauce.
They're not going to be in the sequel of that book.
I think they are important. But back again to Olympic Island.
They were
quickly.
Horrible.
This. Why were they horrible, Boots?
Anyway, the Olympic Island thing was special.
What makes a band horrible, Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan? What makes a band horrible? And thanks again for guesting
well,
on
couple,
our...
Well, a couple... Well, I'll just name a couple things that Bootsauce did wrong.
They covered hot chocolate.
They had dreads. They were funky. And... they were like supposed to be funny, like everyone's a wiener or whatever that
That's a hot chocolate cover.
But wasn't it Everyone's a
Everyone's Winner? Everyone's a Winner, babe. That's no lie.
They were just bad. But they represent a funny time. In you're right, because they were like, they were a major label band, and like they were, you know, they were making it or whatever. And it was just sort of, you know, there were lots of cool bands happening, but I guess no one got their act together until after that.
Okay, back to the thread. Just quickly, Chris Murphy, Rock
anyway,
and Sloan.
So we're happy to play with all those.
Go ahead.
We were happy to play with all those bands because normally we end up playing with, you know, Matthew Good and, you know, whoever, you know, is slapped on some big bill. But, you know, admittedly, that's sort of like a money-sucking sort of like existence that we sometimes have in Canada. But it's often to offset our losses because we lose so much money going to the southern states, which we're about to go and do, that we play these shows in Canada for money. And, you know, it's sometimes a harsh situation. But
okay, but I'm just wondering about the actual organizational thing, Chris. The organizational thing.
We
Who
had Sam
you
Roberts
to
in
get?
The can. We had Sam Roberts
okay,
in
so
the can.
So everything was fine. But
so with Sloan and Sam Roberts, we kind of figured that we could sort of pick whoever we wanted. Now, there was some pressure from people to get a band, at least one band, that was being played on the radio. Now, our record was not that current, and Sam Roberts, I think they probably have like a ninth single or something from that record that's being played, but he was very kind of last year. Like, I mean, still very big, obviously, but like, you know, so they were looking for really on the radio right now. So, like, there was some pressure to do that kind of thing and get that kind of band.
But if you didn't get Sam Roberts, was there any other bands that you were maybe forced to get? Like, would you be forced to get, say, like, the Tea Party or sort of like an Edge Festy type
right.
band?
But the thing, we wouldn't...
You wouldn't have gone ahead.
You're probably right that if we didn't have Sam Roberts, we mightn't have had the clout to pull it off as sort of unscathed as it turned out to be. I wouldn't say that it was 100% perfect, this lineup. And the thing is, we were deciding as we went, it's like, can we get bands like Pony Deluxe to play, or do we have to get sort of bigger name bands? And when Lollapalooza canceled, for example, we were able to get
Broken Social Scene.
And with that addition, it was basically like we could have gotten away with just having Broken Social Scene, Sam Roberts and Sloan, and we could have just got a whole bunch of unknown bands, like, you know, the Evaporators or whoever, or the Smugglers.
And we're speaking here to Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan. And in part two of our conversation, I spoke to Chris last week. Hello, Chris Murphy. How are you doing?
Hey.
Thanks for coming in last week. And thanks again for coming in today in an Nerdwater Human Serviette radio show. I was kind of asking you a bit about hardcore roots. You were in a hardcore band called Aware. Now, does good hardcore always come from small conservative towns like Halifax? Because Halifax is kind of unique, isn't it? There's no Sunday shopping, is there, in Halifax? No Sunday shopping.
I think that's true, yeah.
So because there's no Sunday shopping, are the kids jamming instead? Do small towns breed that?
Well, there are a lot of universities, and there's a really great art school. And so I think that it's sort of like it has both. It is quite conservative in small town and that kind of thing, but it also has this sort of great arts community and college community, and the college radio station is all really great. And, you know, there's a lot of good music coming through, and we heard everything on...
And it was your band, Aware, right? CKDU Halifax.
Well, CKDU, yeah. Aware was a one-show thing. But I played in a band called Whiteout. We played shows in 86, and then Aware was playing... '87, '88, and then Spent in '88.
And none of these bands ever released anything. Like, there's nothing that we can hear, is there?
Just tapes.
But there's nothing ever released. And did anybody from any of the bands ever play in anything? Did they?
Well, we were releasing tapes.
Well, no, that's what bands did.
Yeah.
They released tapes.
That's right. But Gordon Krieger from Spent and
That's
Aware.
What I wanted to ask you. I keep saying, did any of the members of any of the bands ever go on to anything?
Well, he works at Brave New Waves.
But what is very important.
Yes.
But what I was just remembering was Submission Hold, Insult to Injury, Jen, local Vancouver punk rock legends. They have some connection to you guys, don't they? Because they were hardcore back then. How do you know Jen from Insult to Injury, Submission Hold? What's the Sloan connection with that? Because some people go like, Sloan, Submission Hold, connection? But there is a connection, isn't there? Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan, live here on an Nerdwater Human Serviette radio show.
You know what? I'd be guessing if Jen is the same girl as the girl who's from Fredericton, had tattoos and all that stuff. Is that the same girl? Well, she was in a band called Hector's Body. And Kearney Lake Road, my band, with and the Straitjackets and Hector's Body did a tour to Montreal and Toronto in 1989. And so we all played together. And they were in sort of, I wouldn't know how to describe Hector's Body. They were probably into, they were a little artier than we were. We were into the Minutemen and stuff. And I was into like No Means No and the stuff.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. It's Friday, September 24th, and yes, we are experiencing some technical difficulties. We're very sorry about that. We will return to the Nardwar, the Human Serviette radio show, as soon as we figure things out. Thank you very much for your patience.
Are you worried about what you're going to do on the weekend with no NHL hockey? Don't worry. CITR 101.9 FM has the best answer for the NHL blues. CITR 101.9 FM presents another season of men's UBC hockey. The men open their season at home against Saskatchewan on Friday, October 8th. Game time is 7:30, and of course, you can catch it live and commercial-free on CITR 101.9 FM or listen on the web at www.citr.ca. Join Mike Wall as he brings you all the action.
Dump, that was Barton. He gets right back up. The Energizer buddy, but you know what I'm saying, this Barton is.
And what do we have to say about no NHL hockey? Oh, well, we have the best, next best thing in UBC men's hockey. CITR, your independent voice of T-Bird Hockey.
Okay, back to the thread. Just quickly, Chris Murphy, Rocket
anyway,
Man Sloan.
So we're Olympic happy to play with all those.
Go ahead.
We were happy to play with all those bands because normally we end up playing with, you know, Matthew Good and, you know, whoever, you know, is slapped on some big bill. But, you know, admittedly, that's sort of like a money-sucking sort of like existence that we sometimes have in Canada. But it's often to offset our losses because we lose so much money going to the southern states, which we're about to go and do, that we play these shows in Canada for money. And, you know, it's sometimes a harsh situation. But
okay, but I'm just wondering about the actual organizational thing, Chris. The organizational thing.
We
Who
had
were
Sam
you
Roberts
to
in
get?
The can. We had Sam Roberts
okay,
in
so
the can.
Okay, so everything was fine. But
so with Sloan and Sam Roberts, we kind of figured that we could sort of pick whoever we wanted. Now, there was some pressure from people to get a band, at least one band, that was being played on the radio. Now, our record was not that current. And Sam Roberts, I think they probably have like a ninth single or something from that record that's being played. But he was very kind of last year. Like, I mean, still very big, obviously. But, like, you know, so they were looking for really on the radio right now. So, like, there was some pressure to do that kind of thing and get that kind of band.
But if you didn't get Sam Roberts, was there any other bands that you were maybe forced to get? Like, would you be forced to get, say, like, the Tea Party or sort of like an Edge Fest-y type
right.
band?
But the thing, we wouldn't...
You wouldn't have gone ahead.
You're probably right that if we didn't have Sam Roberts, we mightn't have had the clout to pull it off as sort of unscathed as it turned out to be. I wouldn't say that it was 100% perfect, this lineup. And the thing is, we were deciding as we went, it's like, can we get bands like Pony Deluxe to play, or do we have to get sort of bigger name bands? And when Lollapalooza canceled, for example, we were able to get
Broken Social Scene.
And with that addition, it was basically like we could have gotten away with just having Broken Social Scene, Sam Roberts and Sloan, and we could have just got a whole bunch of unknown bands like, you know, the Evaporators or whoever. Or the Smugglers.
And we're speaking here to Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan. And in part two of our conversation, I spoke to Chris last week. Hello, Chris Murphy. How are you doing?
Hey.
Thanks for coming in last week. And thanks again for coming in today in an Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show. I was kind of asking you a bit about hardcore roots. You were in a hardcore band called Aware. Now, does good hardcore always come from small conservative towns like Halifax? Because Halifax is kind of unique, isn't it? There's no Sunday shopping, is there, in Halifax? No Sunday shopping.
I think that's true, yeah.
So because there's no Sunday shopping, are the kids jamming instead? Do small towns breed that?
Well, there are a lot of universities, and there's a really great art school. And so I think that it's sort of like it has both. It is quite conservative and small town and that kind of thing, but it also has this sort of great arts community and college community, and the college radio station is all really great. And, you know, there's a lot of good music coming through, and we heard everything on...
And it was your band, Aware, right? CKDU Halifax.
Well, CKDU, yeah. Aware was a one-show thing. But I played in a band called Whiteout. We played shows in 86, and then Aware was playing... '87, '88, and then Spent in '88.
And none of these bands ever released anything. Like, there's nothing that we can hear, is there?
Just tapes.
But there's nothing ever released. And did anybody from any of the bands ever play in anything? Did they
ever?
Well,
we were releasing tapes.
Well, no, that's what bands did.
Yeah.
They released tapes.
That's right. But Gordon Krieger from Spent and
That's Aware. What I wanted to ask you. I keep saying, did any of the members of any of the bands ever go on to anything?
Well, he works at Brave New Waves.
But what, which is very important.
Yes.
But what I was just remembering was Submission Hold, Insult to Injury, Jen, local Vancouver punk rock legends, they have some connection to you guys, don't they? Because they were hardcore back then. How do you know Jen from Insult to Injury, Submission Hold? What's the Sloan connection with that? Because some people go like, Sloan, Submission Hold, connection? But there is a connection, isn't there, Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan, live here on an Ardbody Human Serviette radio show.
You know what? I'd be guessing. If Jen is the same girl as the girl who's from Fredericton, had tattoos and all that stuff, is that the same girl? Well, she was in a band called Hector's Body. And Kearney Lake Road, my band, with in Montreal, we played the Fofoon.
Did anybody come down to see you and check you out at that time? Like, did you have a manager pushing you guys?
We had Peter Rowan.
From the beginning, wow.
We had Peter Rowan was sort of involved in that. But Kearney Lake, the Straitjackets were the band. They were like they had a record. Kearney Lake Road didn't have a
record. Where were the Straitjackets from?
They were from Nova Scotia.
Really? And they had some vinyl.
Yes, they have. They had a record called... what's it called?
We'll have to go try to dig it out right here at CITR FM
102. I don't know if you would like it, but it's kind of, they were into, like, they would play like Black Sabbath covers and that kind of thing. But they were good. Like, they were all like super duper players, as opposed to us. We were like pretty crappy.
So you're playing quite a few punk gigs. And then what inspired you to take that trip to Ian MacKay's house? And had many other kids made this trip?
Well, that was before that, Chris. I went down. The first time I went down, I went with my friend Chris Murphy, another Chris Murphy, and I, and then my other friend Scott Kennedy. We went down in 87 and stayed for, you know, 2 weeks or whatever, like sleeping in the van and going to see shows. And I forget which shows we saw which year, but we definitely went right up to Discord House, and which is, you know, and we, this room I'm holding in my hand, 20 Years of Discord, a compilation that, can I tell?
It's
can
a
I
gift.
Say, can I say that it's a present that Nardwar is giving me?
Well, for coming to the Nardwar to Human Serviette radio show 2 weeks in a row, I thought about that Discord box set.
Well, anyway, this room right here, this is in the Discord house, and we went right up to this house in Virginia.
You see the before and after picture in that booklet, because there's a picture before and after.
Oh, nice.
And some of the same stickers are still there, like they haven't changed at all. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, that's great.
And we're speaking here to Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band
Sloan
here. Oh,
Jeff Nelson doesn't look too good.
Live on the Nardwar to Human Serviette radio show. Talk about his pilgrimage to go see Minor Threat Fugazi Empire, 1986, right?
87.
1 year off. I'm always 1 year off.
But
right.
I did. I went up to 80, in 86. I went to see Descendants and Dag Nasty and No Means No in Montreal.
But what was this trip to DC like? At one point, weren't you pitied by Ian MacKay? And he's kind of like, "Come on, you can come in the house."
Yeah, they were saying he was saying we could stay with them and stuff, and we were too cool. We were too embarrassed, like, because we were obviously fans, and we were going up to his door under the auspices or whatever, under the guise of buying records off him, even though we had all the records and he was selling them to us for $4 or whatever, and we're rebuying the Scream record, but you know, it was a different color or whatever. We had the yellow one, he had the purple one, and
you must have come back pretty inspired from that trip.
Oh yeah, well, it changed my life and it made me want to be approachable and, you know, good to people who care about music and who care.
When would people say that you abandoned your hardcore roots? Not your hardcore ideals, because, I mean, you still do these big, giant festivals, you know, very hardcore, doing these big festivals and stuff like that. But when did you abandon your hardcore roots? When would people say that? I'm not saying you did, but when would other people say that you abandoned that?
Well, I joined a band called Blackpool in about 1990. Carney Lake Road, my band, broke up, and I got poached by sort of older guys who were like 25, and I was about 20 or 21, and I joined this band, and they were kind of like almost like a Creedence Clearwater Revival type band, or like a The Band type band, and I joined that band. And
were you on drums?
No, I was playing bass, and they got a record deal, and do you know this story? They were a band, and they played around town, and they got paid, and they actually got paid, and I would sometimes personally get $100 a night to play. It was just outrageous money, because Carney Lake Road, we existed for a couple of years. We were one of the most popular bands in the city, and we saved all our money for 2 years, and I think we had $1,500. And
then you got Blackpool.
And then Blackpool, then they were making $400 and $500 a show, and I couldn't believe it. And Blackpool became the band. Terry Brown, this British fellow who produced all the Rush records, he was coming to town to play to do some workshop at a festival where he was going to produce a band in front of a whole bunch of nerds, and they had to pay $100 to get in and watch him work. And Blackpool ended up being the band. They didn't have a bass player. They asked me to do it, and I was such a Rush fan, I wanted to meet Terry Brown. So I went in to play bass. I could barely play. I had played bass in a hardcore band before, and then I had to play bass, and he had worked with Geddy Lee.
It really was the Rush connection.
Yeah, and he had worked with Geddy Lee, and I was surrounded by music nerds, and they kept saying, "I think he's sharp, Terry. I think he's flat, Terry. And I think he's off." And then we do like a live take in the studio, and then it's like, "Okay, we're going to keep that. We're going to redo the bass." So I had to go into the control room with Terry Brown, surrounded by everybody, and Terry was, as I played the bass, Terry was with his fingers muting my other strings because they were ringing, because I couldn't get them to stop ringing. So he would get right in beside me and put his fingers on the strings I wasn't using, and it was humiliating, and I was sweating.
Have you seen him since at all?
I may have seen him about, you know.
But this is the dude from Rush. He's allowed to touch you.
No, I'm fine.
He's allowed to touch
and
you.
And because of that, I play in a very muffled style. I use my whole hand across, and I go boom, and I don't let any strings ring. because I was so traumatized by that.
Because you're used to a guy reaching over.
Yeah.
So you abandoned your hardcore roots through Blackpool.
Well, I mean, I'm just...
And then, like, after years of Sloan kicking out, I've heard people on CITR and say stuff like, well, that was Sloan when they were good. You know, like, people will say stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm
not trying to insult you.
I'm aware of that.
But, you know, I mean, I've always been fascinated by this. Like, for instance, like, people, they get into you guys, they get into Sloan,
yeah.
And then they discover, this is kind of an old illusion, a few years off, but
yeah.
Then they discover Sebado. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Then they discover, like, Sebado were on Shrimper tape. And then they discover other sort of bands, like the Mountain Goats, you know, who are now on 4AD. That kind of doesn't really work. But, you know what I mean? Then they go deeper and deeper. And then they totally disown you, even though you got them into all that stuff initially.
Yeah.
So you have the hardcore people abandoning you. You have your early fans abandoning you. Then you have the hit radio fans that are fickle. Where do you go? It must be frustrating.
It is frustrating a little bit. But at the same time, I have empathy. I was a big, I don't know, U2 fan or something. And then... You know, even though I'm from Halifax and, you know, I never saw them. I saw them years later. But, like, to me, I was the only kid in my class who was into them, although they were probably already huge. But, you know, by the time Joshua Tree came out, like, I couldn't like them anymore. Like, everybody, like, every dork liked them. And it's about ownership. Like, I think the people who treat you that way are kind of, you know, they're kind of... It's a young thing. It's about being young, or it's about being a loser. I mean, either I understand it in kids, but in adults, I just feel you're a loser. Like, you know, James Keast or something from Exclaim magazine, who wrote about the Olympic Island show, but wouldn't review our band or Sam Roberts. But he's calling me because he's on my hockey team to get like a press pass. But then he says, "Oh, I saw the cool bands anyway." He's like a 30-year-old man, or he's like a 35-year-old man. He's a loser, in my mind. But, like, if it's a kid, it's like, I don't like you anymore because you used to be cool. It's like, well, I understand. Like,
well, I guess the thing is, if you don't want to do it, you can just quit, right? But you don't want to quit.
Well, I don't think we should have to quit.
Because isn't that what people say, like reviewers say, well, if you don't want me to review you, quit. Or if you're mad you're not going to get a review, quit. You know what I mean? Like, they put these sort of assumptions
yeah.
on you.
Yeah, well, we're still getting along. I understand, and like sometimes I feel like quitting. If it's you know for sure, but like I don't think that I'm that talented that I'm gonna be able to go out and do a better thing. Like I really like my band, and I really like looking at our records together. And I don't think the records are getting worse and worse or anything. They're different, or like sometimes I think.
Well, I think it's because you love music, and I think it's amazing how you use these music connections to like rule your life. You're just saying the Rush connection made you Blackpool and made you abandon your hardcore connections. And then you mentioned a bit about U2, how you know you didn't really like some of their later stuff, but you still kind of got into the U2 because you told me once, Chris, that you jammed with Daniel Lanois. Is this true? Daniel Lanois and Snow Informer and you. Is this true?
Yes. And the other person that was at that jam that you might not know, his name is Stuart Cameron. And Stuart Cameron is the son of John Allen Cameron, who's like a you know, kind of like a East Coast Cape Bretoner storyteller guy. You don't know who this is, do you? Anyway, he's older, like 60s and 70s.
His son
was in on that jam. But I was just at my friend Paul Newman, formerly of the Doughboys. He's our guitar tech. I was just at his wedding 2 weeks ago, and I jammed with, this isn't as punk, but I jammed with Ron Sexsmith and Stuart Cameron again. He's at every party, and we had a nice little jam there, too.
Can you set up, not to belittle the Ron Sexsmith connection, but can you please set up this jam with Snow and Daniel Lanois? And I love the way you do it because, you know, Daniel Lanois, you jam with the Rush guy because there's a Rush guy. You know, like Daniel Lanois and Snow.
Well, there's not really a great setup. It was at the Junos in Newfoundland, and it was just, there was like, they have this jam room set up all the time, so like yahoos can go there. And then at one point, everybody's like, Lanois is hanging around, and everybody's sort of like,
and Daniel, of course,
lips.
Is the producer of U2, we should
That's
say.
Right.
It's a Canadian.
Yeah. And he gets up and starts playing guitar, and then everybody wants to get up, and a whole bunch of dorks get up. And at one point, some horrible drummer got up, and then, Lanois stopped. He wouldn't play anymore until this guy
Which is
got
kind
off.
Of funny, right?
It is funny. And then I ended up on bass, and he was just doing all this noodling in E, and I just played E, and my joke was that I was E note. And it was a Lanois E note.
Now, speaking of gong shows, did you ever feel that
Pardon?
You would get gong showed out of there? Did you ever feel that you would get gong showed out of there? Like, did he give you any weird glances?
No.
He said he'd stop playing drums.
No, because I was super safe. I didn't start like slapping and popping.
Did he know who you were or anything?
No, I don't know.
But
maybe.
Did he try to do any U2 bass lines or anything?
No.
At what point, Chris Murphy of Sloan, and we're speaking to Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan, who has returned to the Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show for a second week. Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate you joining me here today.
I think your listenership is going to drop off.
No, I really appreciate
back.
It. Now, speaking, let's have it another week if we can. Speaking of gong shows, when you played in Vancouver a little while back in Abbotsford, was there not a gong show going on stage there?
Yes.
You lost your voice.
Yes.
What was that? And had you ever had that happen before? And what made you do what you did?
We played at the Vogue Theater, I think, that time in Vancouver. And then later that night at a place called, was it the Green Room?
The Green Room?
Yeah.
The Media Club, I think it might be called now.
Yeah. Well, we had our friends Greg McDonald or the Goose or whatever from formerly of Pepper Sands. I know he's playing with Carolyn Mark right now in that band.
The Yoko Cassionios.
Well, he doesn't play with them, but also the Yoko Cassionos were there too, Juice and Misty and Chad, and we all did sort of like a late night show after the Vogue Theater, and it was very fun. But it was during that time that I completely screwed my voice, and it was really fun, and it was probably really horrible to watch. And actually, I think they gave me a video of it, and I found it so unwatchable, I couldn't watch it. But I loved doing it, but I lost my voice, and I lost it so bad that I had to call them and say, "Hey guys, I can't sing tonight. Can you come and sing all the choruses? I'll try and sing the verses, and you guys help me with the choruses." So
that is kind of interesting that you made the guys who made you lose your voice come and help rescue you from your lost voice. That's interesting.
It is, except the way you say it makes me sound like I was trying to get them back, or I felt like they owed me. I think that they were coming anyway, and I also thought that they might enjoy it.
And so you set up a couple of mics up on stage.
Yes, and so it was a free for all, and it was really fun. It was fun for us. It might have been, you know, for anyone paying a lot of money. That's the other thing about is this whole trap you get into. Like once people start paying a lot of money, like you can't really just fool around. You have to play some. People are paying money because they think that you have hits. And
what
stuff.
Shows have you been to, Chris Murphy, the rock and roll band Sloan, where you've paid a lot of money, or people have paid a lot of money, and you've seen people joking around and not put on a full performance? Now, I'd mentioned Weezer earlier, but I remember when they first came to Vancouver, they played like their first album. No, actually, it was another gig. Maybe it wasn't them. But, you know, like you were mentioning last week about bands only having one album and they don't have that many tunes to play. Well, maybe not that example, but what is like some of the worst gigs you've seen where it's been a lot of money?
I don't know, but we used to be pretty bad. We used to be pretty hit or miss. I mean, we still can be. Like, I think the last two times we've played have been pretty bad. Andrew has been just – the pace has been so slow. Like, I just found I can't – he won't speed up, and it's driving me crazy. But you know, like, we used to be more like replacement style. Like, we would play a cover, and then it's like
you'd break dance. I remember you'd break dance.
Yeah, that kind of rollerblade. I rollerbladed at one show.
I was actually going to say, though, you know, I was saying to you earlier, kind of like about how, you know, some fans that got into you are now not into you. People, when you abandon your hardcore roots, you lost a whole bunch of your fan base when you guys lost your hardcore influences. I was going to say, though, that we have a member here at CITR, Parms, and she's the promotions director at CITR, and she does a radio show as well, and she played bass with you guys up on stage. Like, you handed her the bass.
Oh, yeah.
I met her at the gig. I told her about CITR, and now she joins CITR, so she's here because of you.
That's
indirectly, you know what I mean? Because she met me, and I told her about CITR, but I met her because she played bass. I was like, wow, you play bass with Sloan, you know, because, like, you handed the bass to a kid.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, that's an awesome story, and there's quite a few people like that who say, you know, who have gone on to do cool things. And, you know, maybe they haven't stayed, you know, huge Sloan fans. But, you know, there are a lot of people that we met in the early years that have gone on and done really cool things and joined cool bands and whatever, or are involved in cool community stuff. Or,
well, you mentioned about touring with Jet last week, Chris Murphy, the rock and roll band Sloan.
Yeah.
The gigs went well? Question mark?
They were really good, and we played to a lot of people, and I usually hate opening for anybody because I think that people don't really care about the opening band.
But don't you think, though, like Freddie Mercury, in his prime, opening for, you know, some huge band, say like Sonic Youth, that he would blow away Sonic Youth, even if everybody was a Sonic Youth fan, just by his sheer talent?
Yes, and also his sheer audaciousness. I'm just, you know, I can be an egomaniac and stuff, but I sometimes don't have the confidence to do it if I feel that we're falling upon deaf ears. But I'm more confident now, or not confident, but just like I know that, you know, I like our band and I think we're good enough. Like, but you know, sometimes I do a whole jackassing around shtick that if I feel that people aren't there to see me, I feel like, well, I shouldn't do that. It's kind of obnoxious.
What's the worst reaction you've got from opening? I mentioned again the Spinal Tap Newfoundland incident. Could you briefly describe that, Chris Murphy of Sloan? Because I found that fascinating. Like, you opening for Spinal Tap is your most Spinal Tap-ish moment, perhaps, right?
Well, to be honest, they played before we did.
And that was the time that Spinal Tap played. They did?
Yes, because they played
5 gigs in like one day or
three.
Okay.
And they played in Newfoundland, and they played in...
And again, Chris Murphy's thing about me, Nardwuar, a human serviette, is that I'm always wrong.
Always a little bit wrong. You're always mostly right. To say it in a more positive way.
Thank you. You're
almost always...
Well, I'm a bit off. I'm a bit off.
Yeah, you're often a bit off.
Okay, so you didn't headline, and you didn't play 5
gigs. We didn't headline. Like, at the time, like, we were a brand new band or whatever. It was like, I think it might have been July 1st, 92, or it was either 92 or 93. And the other bands on that, let me just tell you what the festivals were like then. It was like Kim Mitchell.
Nothing wrong with that?
Not well...
Isn't he like a chef in Toronto now or something?
I don't think so. Maybe.
Okay.
But I forget who else. But
Kim Mitchell, Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap played early, and then they played in Ontario, and then they played in...
Maybe Hardship Post?
I doubt it, because we were just starting, and those other bands, I think they may have existed, but like they didn't really... People didn't know who they were yet at that point. We were first.
Okay.
No, we weren't.
If you could continue on, please. Spinal Tap.
There's no story. Spinal Tap played. I don't even know. I don't even remember if we saw them. I remember seeing them get into a car, and they were driven around and shown around.
Okay. Afterwards, weren't you, like, besieged by bottles? Like, lots of bottles came your way.
Oh, okay. Again, you're mixing up stories. No, that was about 5 or 6 years later.
Okay. What was that story then?
That was, we had just gotten back. This is about 98, and we were just back from our first trip to Japan, and we had to play a show.
And we got to give props to Mariko for phoning in last week, eh?
Yeah.
One of your longtime Japanese fans there.
Yeah, well, anyway, we had already canceled twice in Newfoundland. We had played before, but the last two times we canceled, one because Andrew was sick and one because there was an Air Canada strike. And so we wanted to cancel again because we had just come back from Japan. We got treated like the Beatles, and then had to go to Newfoundland, and they wouldn't do two shows. They wouldn't do an all ages show. It had to be a bar show. And now they were going to do two shows, and then there weren't enough people going to do an all ages show. Then it was going to be mostly a bar show and a tiny little balcony full of all ages kids. So I went there, and I was like, I blow it out. And our manager said, if you blow this out, you can never go back to Newfoundland because you've already blown it twice. So we had to go, and I went, and I talked to a bunch of kids before the show, and I was all kind of bummed out. You know, it's like, well, we'll be on this balcony way in the back. And so I was kind of in a sort of sucky mood that these kids were being treated badly. And then we played, and then there was a whole bunch of engineering students at the front saying, play Underwhelmed, which is, you know...
Which now you lead off with to calm everybody down.
Well, no, we don't. We just did that once. But, play Underwhelmed. And then I was like, okay, whatever, we're going to play it. And then they kept yelling it through. We played like a quiet song. They're like, play Underwhelmed. And I was like, after that, and I was like, okay, guys, if you don't cut it out, you know, we're not going to play it. And then I went back to play drums, and then they all sort of pushed to the front, and they're all giving me the finger, like, play Underwhelmed, you idiot. And then, with more obscenities. And then I had to come back out to the front, and I was right in front of them, and I was like, can I have the lights, please? I have to kick out some people. And then then the lights came on, and people started booing, and some people, and they were serving beer in cans, and they were squishing them and throwing them like throwing stars. And this is why people don't serve beer in cans, because people do this kind of thing. So we're getting beer thrown at us. And then at one point, the guy comes I'm right at the front of the stage, and the guy gets pulled over, and he gives me the finger right in my face. And I spit in his hair, which is really bad, and I don't want anyone to spit on me. I spit in his hair. I was furious at him. And then there was a whole riot. And then there was fights, and then there was, like, beer cans, and there's beer all over the stage, and, like, crumpled up beer.
Was the music over at that point?
Oh, yeah. We had to leave.
So you were halfway through your set, and then the pandemonium started?
Yeah, and then I was getting Andrew had done his thing, and then so it's like we're in the home stretch, and I was trying to kick somebody out, and then I ended up spitting in his hair, which is obnoxious, but kind of punk, but not really. But so then there was a big, big brawl, and people were going, yeah, he's an idiot. And people going, yeah, who do you think you are? And, like, they were fighting with each other and throwing beer and beer cans, and there was, like, a whole riot.
Well, did you think to go back to your instruments and play at that point? Like, at what point did you know you weren't going to play?
I walked off, and then they
followed
me. So
you spat and then walked off? So you didn't spit there and
keep looking
at the guy?
Well, like, the whole stage was covered in beer at that point. It was just like, you know, it was just like a... It was like an electrical nightmare.
What were the reviews afterwards? What sort of reaction? Was there anything you had to deal with on the legal end now that it's a few years later?
No. You mean because of spitting on someone?
Yeah.
No, but I mean, you could probably get in trouble for that. But I didn't get in trouble for
that.
How
about the reviews afterwards? Was there any reviews? Or because it was sort of like a...
I didn't clip anything from the Memorial University paper.
Have you heard anything from that? Does anybody ever bring up that story?
I sometimes meet people that say they were at that show. And they apologize for how it went down.
So that is bad. That is a bad show. So nothing happened like that on the Jet tour then?
Oh, no. All the Jet shows were good. And, in fact, it was quite a sort of corporate tour. Like, I love Jet, and they were really good. But really good to us, too. But, you know, it was sort of sponsored by, like, Verizon Wireless. And a lot of the shows were at House of Blues. And Verizon and House of Blues, I think, are corporate cahoots. Anyway, so... And that was all kind of sprung on the Jet guys. Like, they were really unhappy about all the sort of corporate presence at that thing. But I think that their manager also manages the Vines. And I think that their management was in some kind of trouble because the Vines were breaking up, or they were canceling shows or something, and they were in financial straits. And so Jet are doing this thing, and they're like, oh, this is so embarrassing. And they had to do all these, like, photos. Like, the Verizon did this whole thing, you know, get your picture taken with a Verizon phone or whatever, and you can meet Jet after the show. And they had to do these things, and they had to do a whole bunch of crap they didn't want to do. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people sort of, like, getting down on them. It's like, yeah, well, Jet's pretty corporate. It's like, well, fair enough. Like, they took that money, or their management did, or whatever. But, like, Jet are cool guys, and they like... Whatever. They like cool music.
Well, let's return to your hardcore roots here for a moment, Chris. Why don't we play a track right there off the Discord compilation?
Am I boring you?
Is there a track that you'd like to hear? Well, I thought we could play a track and then come back and ask you a few more questions here live with Chris Murphy of Rock and Roll Band Sloan.
Listening!
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And we still have Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan here on the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show.
Thank you very much, Nardwuar. And that was Circles by Dag Nasty from their first record with the singer Dave Smalley. It's funny, when I saw Dag Nasty in 1986, they had just played their third show with their second singer, Peter Kortner. And they were opening for the Descendants. And I didn't even know who Dag Nasty was at the time. I went up, I did the 14-hour drive, thank you very much, to see the Descendants. And in my mind...
Was this in Montreal or in D.C. that you saw them?
Montreal. And I thought the Descendants were huge. Because their records had made it to Halifax, I kind of imagined that like everybody would be going to see them anyway. Of course, they played in a tiny club. And I have some photos of that night. And it was... You don't know who Ewan McDonald is, do you?
Yeah, I do. He's the guy that's the promoter at the Horseshoe in Toronto.
That might be true.
No, he's a younger guy. No, sorry, he's a different guy. Ewan, who promotes gigs with Against the Grain in Toronto. Yeah. And again, people may wonder who that voice is. Well, I'm Nardwuar Human Serviette, and that's Chris Murphy of the band Sloan. And I just wanted to say, Chris, thank you for joining me the second week in a row on a Nardwuar Human Serviette radio show.
And next week to be determined.
On we'll CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, Columbia, Canada. But you were just saying, so the Descendants and Dag Nasty played together?
They played together, and I drove up with some friends, and we went and we saw them. That was 86, and we drove up and saw that. And I wasn't expecting to see Dag Nasty. I didn't know who they were, although I loved Minor Threat, and I knew they were broken up. But I didn't know that Brian Baker had made a new band, and Brian Baker from Minor Threat is the guitar player and sort of the mastermind behind...
How Minor Threat-y were they then, and how many people were there because he was a Minor Threat-ian, and did he have the same moves as he had in Minor Threat-ian, and who was Ewan?
Ewan was a punk from Halifax, and it was kind of through his record collection that I kind of got into the bands that I got into. It was like 7 Seconds, and the Bad Brains, and the Descendants, and Angry Simones, and I can't remember who else. Black Flag and stuff like that. But he, and along with Sherry McDonald, were influential to me for turning me on to a lot of punk. I knew Ewan's little sister. And Ewan was in a band, one of the first Halifax hardcore bands. They were called Urban Attack. And I think the graffiti UA still exists on Jay's childhood home of Park Victoria. But they were all like skateboard, kind of like American hardcore style thing.
Did they release vinyl?
Well, he went on to become a band called Fair Warning. And they
out of Montreal.
Yeah, and they released vinyl. And then he was also in a band called, I don't know if Ewan was in it, but it's Ian Cook from Fair Warning went on to a band called Failsafe. Do you remember that band?
I've heard the name before.
And then was he also in a band called Bliss? Do you remember
that
band?
Bliss from Montreal, yes. Yeah. They had dreads, though, and you don't really like the dreads.
I don't really like dreads, but the other Chris Murphy, my friend Chris Murphy that was in bands with me, he had dreads, and he was all right.
Just as a little side note here, before we get back to the Dag Nasty Descendants gig here with Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan, out of Halifax, what were the bands that released vinyl first that you remember of the punk persuasion? Like there's Jellyfish Babies. What were the bands that had records that like, wow, you have a record out? Or which ones did you see in bins and stuff? I'm talking like pretty much of the punk indie persuasion.
From Halifax?
Yeah.
It was really
or
rare.
Nova Scotia,
well,
I guess.
There was a compilation, this is 86, there was a compilation called Out of the Fog, and it had the Jellyfish Babies.
And Sarah McLachlan's band, right?
That's right, the October Game.
Did you ever see any of that?
I wasn't really into that kind of thing. I probably did see the October Game, like, at a Dal Sub or, like, some show where there were tons of bands in different rooms and stuff like that. But the Jellyfish Babies was really up my alley, and I really wanted to be in the Jellyfish Babies because they went to my high school, and they were a year younger than I was, and they were putting out a record, I think, when they were in grade 12, and it was just driving me crazy. Like, I was so jealous.
And did Mike of Jail end up playing with the Jellyfish Babies? Was that reformed Jellyfish Babies that he played with?
Jellyfish Babies lost their drummer, who was Colleen Britton, who also was the drummer in Aware that we also got rid of. And they moved to Toronto and picked up Mike Belitsky. And I thought from that point on, Jellyfish Babies in my mind were not that great. And then Peter Arsenal from the Jellyfish Babies went on and joined the Doughboys. And Scott Kendall moved out here. And Dave Schellenberg joined band Squirrel, and then he ended up dying of a heroin overdose.
This was the Jellyfish Babies. Did he die in Toronto? Like, was that where they were all living?
Yeah.
What were the other bands that released vinyl? Like, what were the other bands that you looked up to?
Well,
then?
There was
this other curiosity.
Well, nobody
like,
released
Fair
vinyl.
Warning, that's a cool connection.
Yeah, that was. I don't know if that was later, a little bit later, but they did. They went to Montreal to do it, and Peter Rowan was in our friend who became the manager of Sloan, and he had a record label in Fredericton, and it was called DTK, Dress to Kill, and it put out records, but we didn't like those records that much. I mean, they put out a record by a band called 100 Flowers that were kind of a pop band that. I don't know how to describe them. I don't know what they had members of the Killer Clams that were kind of a frat rock sort of band that you probably would have liked. The Smugglers would have liked, and they put out a record, and the Straitjackets put out a record. This is all on DTK, and there was a band I think called the Waffen SS, sort of like a skinhead band or almost like a Nazi band or something, and they put out a record on Plot Records, and Plot Records was Plot Records was Jellyfish Babies and I believe a Waffen SS single, and they're the minor threat to as minor threat is to Discord, the band Dog Food was to Plot Records, and it was the plot to overthrow Flamingo Records, actually, which put out the Out of the Fog compilation. And so Dog Food, I don't think they ever put out a record, but another guy who was kind of a weird esoteric guy who was older, I remember he was 28 when I was about 18, and I said, how old are you? And he was 28, and I couldn't believe how old he was. His name is Roland Blinn, and he was actually on the Out of the Fog compilation. He put out he definitely put out at least one 7-inch, but nobody was putting out records. Everybody's putting out tapes.
Do you remember any of the rap that was going on there? Like, didn't Public Enemy play in Halifax? Did you go to that gig? Buck 65 talks about that, and MCJ and Cool G.
Yeah, I went to that show. That was at the Dartmouth Sportsplex. That was probably in 1989.
Like, that's pretty amazing. Public Enemy.
Public Enemy came, and they were about 5 hours late, and it was basically a riot. Like, people were freaking out. And it was it MCJ and Cool G played, open for them?
I'm not sure. Maybe it was the Dream Warriors. I'm not sure who.
No, it wasn't Dream Warriors. It might have been MCJ and
or
Cool
Dream,
G.
It wasn't Dream Warriors. Okay, because MCJ and Cool G, right?
Yeah, they were. Were they from Halifax?
Yeah, they were. They're rap, right?
I think they were, but they moved, too. But, but I think, you know who I think opened? I think they were called Down by Law. And they went on to become Modern World Thang. Anyway, and they were all in this sort of Howltown project with Richard Turfry, Stinkin' Rich, Buck 65.
Taking the trip, Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan, in early 1986 to go see The Descendants and...
Dag Nasty.
We just played here live in an Ardwater Human Survey Radio show. What was the reaction like for the Dag Nasty? Like, I mean, that's pretty... That wasn't too after, Minor Threat broke up, right?
Yeah, but 2 or 3 years,
like,
maybe.
What sort of aura was there? Was a lot of people like, ah, it's the guy.
I was definitely like that. I was going bananas, and I was, like, freaking out. And I have pictures of me from that show that I should... I'll put on your website of me singing with Milo from The Descendants. Like, he's down in the crowd and, like, singing the mic, and I'm screaming my head off and, like, going crazy, punking out. But I just want to say I made a mistake. I talked about Sean Cordner. Not Sean Cordner. Peter Cordner.
That's the BMG rep.
He's the BMG rep. Peter Cordner. Being the second singer, he's actually the third singer. The first singer was Sean Brown, who went on to form the band Swizz. You don't know your hardcore, do you?
I know the band Swizz, but what I'm curious about there, Chris Murphy, the rock and band Sloan, the relationship between Dag Nasty and Descendants. You say that people weren't into the Nasty, they were into the Descendants, or they were not into the, what were the equal?
I think people loved Dag Nasty. I certainly did. The Descendants, I think that a lot of the
at that gig.
Yeah, and the Montreal punks, I thought they were all kind of too cool for school and way tougher than we were. We went up and like. My friend was wearing deck shoes, and we were like, is it okay that he's wearing deck shoes? Like, we were nervous. Like, he's wearing shorts and deck shoes, and everybody was, like, completely punked out. Like, in Montreal, everybody's, like, leather jackets with liquid paper all over
them. But it was like
that
everywhere, though, wasn't it? It really was like that everywhere. It was like that here in Vancouver,
too.
Well,
we were from a small town. We didn't know. Like, we
that was the hardcore scene back then. There was a lot of that stuff.
But, again, I found that hardcore was... Again, like, being from a small town, it was all mixed together. So, like, we hung out with the kids who called themselves skinheads, who weren't racist. They were just, like, people just sort of, like, they'd get a hold of a business record, and then all of a sudden they're a skinhead. Like, but our band, my first band, Whiteout, I was definitely of the white magic persuasion. I was, like, positive youth and 7 seconds and, like, youth together united and playing for free and benefits, and like it wasn't like I wasn't like stabbing someone or like getting drunk or like I was into this like positive youth and whatever.
And you are Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan. And Chris, you just returned, and I've mentioned a name over and over again, touring with Jet. I just want to ask you a bit much. How did they, because maybe a bit more here, how did they perceive you guys? When did they first hear you? Because they heard you in Australia. What was the connection? Did you find out exactly when they first heard you, or what songs they were familiar with? Like, how did they end up asking you, and how out of the blue did this come?
They, I think, only really knew our Navy Blues record, which is our fourth record. And we put it out domestically in Australia. Like, we put it out on Murder Records in Australia, and I think we spent about $15,000 doing it. And it sort of came back, sort of paid off in that we got this Jet tour. But, you know, we didn't sell very many records, and we didn't want to go with a distributor. We wanted to have our record label presence there, and we hired someone to be, like, Murder Records Australia and everything. But it was all kind of a big waste of money. But so they had that record. I know that the brothers, Chris and Nick, had that record. And I know that Mark, the bass player, who was sort of like the fourth member, like the last guy to join, he said that he got the job because he knew Navy Blues record. And we sort of started changing our set to be Navy Blues heavy so that they could hear all the songs played live. So we started playing ones we hadn't played in a long time.
What sort of celebrity nods have you got there, Chris Murphy, the rock and roll band Sloan?
I don't know. That's a bit gross to get into, but
I'm just wondering, because I read lots of reviews, and I've interviewed quite a few bands. Like, you know, I'll interview, like, the Von Bondies, and go like, oh, we like Sloan. We'll love to tour with the Sloan. You know, I'll interview Rooney, and they'll be like, oh, we love Sloan. We love to tour with Sloan.
Yeah. Well, we know
and Rooney,
guys.
That band Rooney has a weird thing, isn't it? Like, the name Rooney kind of ties into Sloan, doesn't it?
Yeah, but did I tell you that? Because I sort of thought that.
Well, Rooney, what was that?
Well, it's like a line from in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, because Ferris Bueller's girlfriend's name is Sloan, and his teacher is named Mr. Rooney. And there's a line in the movie. I saw a bit of the movie. I saw it on TV, and there's a line. It's like, Rooney, like somebody yelling, like, Rooney and Sloan, or something like that. And I was like, oh, my God, I wonder if they loved us that much that they called themselves that. But I don't think so, because I think the lead guy in Rooney is the Schwartzman kid.
Whose brother is in Phantom Planet.
I don't even know if he goes by Schwartzman, though, does he? I think they've all got different
names.
They
all changed their names.
Yeah,
to
but Jason Schwartzman, formerly of Phantom Planet, is a fan. Like, he's friends with Jay. And we have another friend, Jason Faulkner, who's been in various bands, and I don't know if you know who that is. He was in that band Jellyfish on their first record. And we know Steve McDonald from our Red Cross. We toured with Red Cross, and we still see Steve McDonald. And I mean, these aren't really celebrities. I mean, I guess they are. Like, that, we were huge Red Cross fans, and we got to meet him, and now he's a friend. So, like, that was pretty exciting.
Would you ever consider going back to your hardcore roots, Chris Murphy, of the rock and roll band Sloan? Like, doing a hardcore album? Like, Ryan Adams always talks about doing hardcore, and I think he's actually recorded, like, a hardcore punk album. Would you ever consider doing that?
I don't know, because, like, I think that hardcore music, like, you know, in fact, I played some hardcore covers with some friends in the past year. Like, went up, and I was the singer, and we learned, like, some Minor Threat songs, and, like,
But would you ever do, like, originals, like this record a whole album of that? And how hard is it to sway the rest of the guys in Sloan to do that?
Well, I don't think the band Sloan would do it. We did, I don't know if you ever heard, I don't know if you have it here, there was a record came out. Well, we did a split single with Eric's Trip, and we covered a song of theirs called Stove, and we also covered a song of theirs called Smother. And the thing about Eric's Trip was they had sort of two sides. They had a flip side thing. They had, like, their super heavy sort of Dinosaur / My Bloody Valentine thing, but they also had their sort of acoustic-y Sebado Neil Young thing. And we felt we didn't know how to beat Eric's Trip at their own game. Like, how do we cover a song of theirs and have it be that different? Now, we did one song. Jay sort of made a sort of proto Beck loop and acoustic guitar, and we did one song. But then I had us do a hardcore version of the song Smother. And we did that, and we also did a cover of Right Brigade one time. Well, we did some hardcore kind of covers, but I have a recording of us doing Right Brigade in the studio, and I also have a recording of us doing this Eric's Trip song in a hardcore style. Now, we did that for a lark, but like the band wouldn't get behind it, and I don't, you know, the hardcore covers I played with some friends recently, like we were kind of doing them. I loved that music and it meant a lot to me, but we're sort of doing them almost in a pastiche, sort of joking way. It's like, I'm not as dogmatic about, you know, I'm still, you know, I don't drink and stuff, but I don't call myself straight edge. You know, I'm a 35-year-old man. Like, hardcore music is for kids, and I think it's important, and I don't want to belittle the importance of like punk music and fringe things that save kids' lives, you know.
Well, let's not belittle also this compilation that you contributed to, because this was on Sub Pop, and this must have been pretty exciting, like contributing something to Sub Pop.
Okay,
now, I'm not sure
what
if you were already
about?
On Geffen at that point, when you recovered the cover, the 7-inch.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't on, that was on Geffen. That got released on Geffen.
It did get released on Geffen.
The thing that we did for Sub Pop was...
Out in a Marsh.
Never Mind the Mollusks.
Okay, kind of close.
We did... Our band.
Were you already signed before that happened?
We were already on Geffen.
Now, do people ever get mad at you? Because on Much Music, they had that show Indie Street, and they kept playing your video for Underwhelmed on Indie Street, even though you were signed to a major, because they claimed they were playing the version you made before you were signed.
Right.
But
well,
didn't, when
true.
You even made the indie version of that video, weren't you already in discussion with major labels?
We probably were.
So, like, you totally, like, milked the system on that.
We probably did, but the thing is, we definitely terrified of Geffen, and we didn't consider ourselves very much a part of the sort of like, I was very much part of the hardcore community and the sort of like music community in general in Halifax, and I mean you can't tell me that I wasn't. I was at the very center of the thing, but
I'm not trying to tell you.
No, I know,
part
but
of that.
I just mean,
say,
I
let's
just
be
mean
excited, Chris Murphy of the Rock and Roll Band Sloan. And, and thanks for coming into the Nerd Radio Human Serviette Radio Show again, winding up here with Chris Murphy of the Band Sloan. Really appreciate Rock and Roll Band Sloan. Well, actually, is it okay to say Rock and Roll Band Sloan?
I prefer grunge.
The grunge rockers, Sloan. To be on Sub Pop, though, to have that comp come out on Sub
Pop.
That's pretty amazing. At least for Eric's trip. I mean, that's pretty amazing. Because that was like the glory. That was like, you know.
We were
amazing.
Jealous that those bands were on Sub Pop. And we were on Geffen. And we were being like ignored by Geffen. And we felt that those bands were getting a lot of support on their indie. And sometimes we felt like we had been sacrificed to the major label. And that all the other bands were going to be successful. Hardship Pose, Jail, and Eric's trip all got signed to Sub Pop. And we sort of thought that we were sort of like the sacrificial lamb, and we were getting
like
screwed
by
Geffen.
Like, you were on the cusp of something, right? You were
but
on the cusp of something.
I wouldn't have done it another
but
way.
Then later,
those guys all ended up getting screwed by Sub Pop, too. And, you know, Sub Pop did
their
best.
But they weren't there at that very moment, though. Because what I was getting here, Chris Murphy of the Rock and Roll Band Sloan, is you've been in there at these interesting points. Like, for instance, you were in negotiations with Alan McGee of Pop Tones. Alan McGee, the manager of Oasis. He has that label, Pop Tones. And he was going to put out, like, a best-of comp of you guys, but I don't think anything happened. But he did end up putting out a best-of comp of the Hives, and then look what happened. After he put out that best-of comp, they ended up getting huge.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird you were in at that moment. How close were you getting to Alan to put out that stuff?
We got pretty close, but the thing is, he was sort of, we were close, and I think that he was sort of...
And what year was this? Let's just say this is like
later.
2001.
This is like
10 years later, you're on the cusp of something else. You're right there.
We met Alan McGee really early on, and he loved our song Underwhelmed, and he said, you know, if you ever have a problem with Geffen, you come and see me because I love your band. And he was always a big supporter. So when we were sort of later, this is like before our Pretty Together record came out, and I don't know what year it is. It's like 2000. It's 2001 because you know what happened? His company, Pop Tones, was a publicly traded company, and it went to hell after September 11th. And we didn't sign, and we were glad we didn't because his company went his like a lot of businesses. They failed after that. And then he did do the Hives thing after that. I think Hives came after that, right? He came back with that Hives thing, and somebody else helped him out, helped him do the money, helped him put the
and
money
together. And it was a comp of Hives stuff, so not new material, which is very similar to like what you were doing. And the way I'm saying this is, like, I'm not saying like you're not successful, because you're hugely successful, but it almost could have even been bigger, and it still is going on. You
know
what
it's
I mean?
Because
like people listening might be saying, oh, well, like, I'm asking you about not being successful, but you are hugely successful. I was just saying these are things that could have taken you even more successfuler.
Well, we've brushed against greatness. We've been doing it for a long time. It's like not a lot of bands have been able to, like, we sort of were the grunge band, you know. We didn't play with Nirvana, but we got signed in the wake of Nirvana. We definitely we benefited from their story, and we also benefited from Oasis's story, and we also played with Strokes and we played with Jet. Like, we're still.
I mean, like, Jet taking you on tour is kind of like the Clash taking Bo Diddley on tour, right?
Oh my God.
Is that a compliment or a put-down? I'm not sure.
Well, it's getting up there harsh, but...
No, what do you mean? That's not harsh.
Well, he was like 70 years old or something.
No, but I was meaning innovator. Why do you immediately think about the age?
How about Stones taking out Ike and Tina?
The Stones, yes, because they were hot at that time. Yes, the Stones taking on Argentina. But I meant Bo Diddley because Jet acknowledged you, just like the Clash acknowledged.
Know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't mean the old. Why do you immediately think I'm thinking about the old thing? Have you been having problems with the old thing? Which
no.
I mentioned last week on an Art of Human Survey radio show where I'm speaking to Chris Murphy at Rock and Roll Band Sloan. I mentioned the band Fountains of Wayne, who have hit it big older. Are they an inspiration to you?
No. They're fine. We toured with them, too, a couple times, and we always ended up sort of like everyone sort of sniffing each other's arse and not really opening up very, very much. They were fine. We weren't big fans. We didn't think of them as a real band. It was like two guys and then some hired guys.
To end this interview, we'll play some Ike and Tina Turner in honor of Sloan,
okay,
a.k.a. Ike and Tina Turner opening up for
Sloan
Jet.
What songs have we played?
A.K.A. the Rolling Stones. And you are Chris Murphy, the Rock and Roll Band Sloan. Winding up here, Chris Murphy of the Rock and Roll Band Sloan.
We should play, I know you're not going to play a Sloan song, but we should have played Ready for You from our record because that was the song that I was going to give you, I was going to send you for your Nardwuar comp.
We will play that. That's off the record that has the other man on it?
No.
It's the record that has The Rest of My Life in it.
Yeah.
That's the ballad.
Balladish.
Okay, Ready for You. It's a garage rocker. In
sort
honor of.
Of
the connection of all these garage rockin' bands playing Halifax and inspiring you, Chris Murphy, to be the person that you are. I wanted to ask you a little bit about Matt Murphy, your namesake there. How is he doing? A little while back, he contacted Mint Records in Vancouver looking for your email.
I don't know if that's true. Matt was living in Halifax for a while. For the past year, and he just moved back to Toronto, and he is still playing in the Super Friends, and he's in a new band called City Field with his girlfriend Sarah Millman and some other people. I don't know who else is. Oh, and Mitchell, and I forget his last name. Mitchell, I want to say Dweeb, but it's something like that, but it's not Dweeb. But he's just moved back to Toronto. And he played me some of his new band the other day, and it was pretty good.
Ding 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 ding. That was like one of those like fake edit things. I was just trying to edit that part out there, Chris Murphy, Rock and Roll Band Sloan.
Why?
Oh, I didn't mean to bring up anything kind of rough there. If he's trying to ask for your email address and he doesn't know your phone number.
He knows all that stuff.
But this asking for email, I thought, no, Chris Murphy, Matt Murphy. I mean, that's how I really re-met you. And again, this is Chris Murphy, the Rock and Roll Band Sloan, that we're speaking to on a Nardwuar Human Serviette radio show. Because I'd met you in 1991. And if you go to Nardwuar.com.
92.
1992.
You know, if you're writing a book or anything, you make sure I'm around.
I'm sorry with the dates. I'm really sorry with the dates.
And you sort of like a savant numbers weirdo.
Nardwuar.com. I don't often plug my own website. Well, I guess I did last
week
on the Nardwuar Human Survey Radio Show. But you can actually check out the interview I did with you, Chris, in 1992 when you came in here to CITR. But I met you again.
Well,
when
I
you
walked
came
out on that one.
You walked out on that interview, and you've graciously come in for another one
but
here
the thing
on
the
Radio Show.
Even when I walked out because I was embarrassed, because you were beating me at my own game, and I thought of myself as a real sort of media manipulator and funny guy and whatever, and you destroyed us. You killed us and, you know, read our bio out of context and was like, so you guys think you're Canada's Sonic Youth? Well, that's – or just something horrible, and I was like, oh, my God. And so ended up leaving. But, I came back. I was playing drums in the Super Friends.
And that's
Matt
the Matt
Murphy's,
Murphy connection. Matt that's why
fan.
Matt Murphy always have a place in my heart.
Matt Murphy will always have a place in my heart, too, and he knows my phone number.
And you're playing
email.
Drums for the Super Friends. What was that like, playing drums for the Super Friends? How much of a draw were you, Chris Murphy?
I don't know if I was a draw. I had a ball, and my own band was broken up. And I think I was sometimes driving Matt nuts or the band nuts because people would come and you know, give me a lot of attention. And I think, you know, I wanted to go because I loved Matt and I wanted to hang out with him and play music. But I think that he was like, yeah, I wasn't even that great a drummer. But I think he also would tire of me, like, grandstanding and stuff like that. And so I almost became like I was like I probably was showing off because I like to show off on the drums and stuff. But, like, almost, I don't know, it was a little bit awkward.
Chris Murphy of the Rock and Roll Band Sloan. Is there another band called Sloan? Is there another band called Sloan? I heard there was a Sloan imposter, much like there was a Peter Chris imposter. And no, I did not know that Peter Chris liked Gene Krupa.
Gene Krupa.
Sorry, I always say the things wrong.
I heard there's a band called Sloan from Spain, and there may even be one in the States. I don't know. But I don't know. They would have to be called Sloan X or something, because I think we already exist as Sloan, don't we?
Just out of curiosity, where did you meet Mike, your road manager?
Do you know this story?
No.
I was at an Axe Wind show in the basement of Lady Perpetual Help Church when I was in grade 9 or 10. I was at this heavy metal show, and the singer was Fiona Campbell, and the other guys, it was all guys, and Fiona Campbell was the singer. And Mike was there, and he was in grade 5. I actually didn't meet him then, but that was the first thing that we were at the same time, and it was in the basement of the church, and the music was so loud and aggressive, he didn't know how to behave, so he and his friends just went into the corner and started wrestling.
And this was in Halifax?
Yeah, he was in grade 5. But then later, he was buddies with the band Thrush Hermit, and what did Thrush Hermit go on to do? Do you know these things?
They ended up doing something in North Dakota with Steve Albini, and now they always get video fact.
Do you know that Joel Plaskett still plays today? Do you know who
Video Fact.
Oh, okay. And Ian and Rob, Rob was in a band, Tigra Benvi, and also now Ian and Rob are in a band now called Camouflage Knights, and they're hip and happening. And
didn't Tigra Benvi have something to do with Catherine Stockhausen?
He went out with her.
Baboom.
But I thought you were going to say Le Tigre. Was that girl, what was her name?
Kathleen Hanna.
Yeah, that's what I thought you meant, but you didn't. So Mike Nelson was the selling merch and tour managing Thrush Hermit when they opened for us in, I don't know, in the mid-90s. And then Mike started doing merch for us, and now Mike is basically working in a managerial capacity for us.
Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan, what is Jay Ferguson, who plays in your band's after gig car accident story? Do you remember what I'm alluding to?
No.
The after gig car accident story. Jay witnessing a car accident after playing a gig.
Don't know it.
Okay, I just thought I would ask. Again, this is Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan. Oh, damn, Chris, I've had the phone lines jammed the entire show. I'm sorry.
Nobody
has been able to phone in up until this point. But if anybody does have any questions for Chris Murphy, it's 822-2487-UBC-CITR. Winding up here, Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan. Thanks again for coming to the Nardwater Human Survey Radio Show. 2 weeks in a row.
Two or three.
It's only 2 weeks.
Okay.
It kind of does seem like three weeks. And probably to the listeners, it seems like 3 weeks as well. You played in the Exclaim Hockey Cup. You were mentioning James Keast earlier from Exclaim magazine.
And they made you
wear number 99.
Yes.
What sort of teasing did you get for playing hockey with these guys?
Well, I read Dave Bedini's book, David Bedini of Rheostatics fame, and he wrote in his book that anyone over the age of 5 that has 99 as their number is a loser. And I was very embarrassed by that. And I wore it, like, I jokingly said that I wanted to be 9. They were like, what number do you want to be? I was like, well, probably 99. I was joking. And then the shirts came, and I was like, what number shall I be? I don't know. Just give me 8 or whatever. What's left over? Like, no way. We made 99 for you. I was like, no way. And so now I'm 99. And then as we get new shirts, I keep wanting to say, well, I want a new number now. But they always make 99.
And this is actually an ice hockey tournament. And how did your team do? And who won?
Well, I play on the Hockey Lads all year long in Toronto, where I live. But during the Exclaim tournament, I play on the Halifax Dartmouth Fairies. And we won a game and lost 2 games. And the Lads, they always lose, too.
Are there any ringers playing in this? Like, who is really a good player, and who are the ringers?
Mike Bolitsky has got a team together now. He played on the Halifax Dartmouth Fairies last year, but now he's got a new team called the Nightmares with the Dean brothers, Sean Dean from the Sadies and his brothers, and they're all fantastic hockey players. And Andrew's playing on the Fairies with me, and I'm nervous that Andrew's going to defect and go to play on the Nightmares.
How about any other ringers? Like any NHLers playing in there?
No. Sam Roberts is a ringer. He's very good, and he was playing on the Jokers, but I don't think he played this year. But he's a fantastic hockey player.
Lastly here, Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan, you wanted to comment a bit about this box set, the Minor Threat box set.
Oh, yeah.
I was wrong there, wasn't I? Because it's not the Minor Threat box
set. Well,
I was just checking to see if you were paying attention.
Oh, I see.
And obviously you weren't, because you're Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band.
But
Sloan.
I don't like to interrupt you every time you make a mistake, or we wouldn't get anywhere.
Ba-boom.
I just wanted to do some quick I just want to say Gray Matter. I'm just like, Gray, the early stuff I kind of missed, but I came
just
in
just maybe an intro. These are some bands on the Discord. Give it some promo.
Yeah, this is the Discord Records. Is it 20 years? 20 years of Discord. And that sort of started happening in the early 80s, and I sort of became aware of it around 84, 85. But the bands that were happening, it's not until about track 16 that I remember these records coming out. And the Gray Matter record, track 16, I remember there were pictures of them playing at this place called Food for Thought. And when I went to Washington, D.C. on my punk pilgrimage, I looked for Food for Thought and ate there and actually ended up seeing the band Three, which were three members of Gray Matter and Jeff Nelson of Minor Threat. I saw them play at Food for Thought, which was a huge thrill. And Dante, the drummer from Gray Matter, is the proprietor at the Black Cat, where we play in Washington, D.C., and when we're there, I talked to him, and he gave me some Gray Matter t-shirts. Rites of Spring was one of my favorite bands. They're track 17, and I saw them play as Happy Go Licky in Washington, D.C. in 1987 or 8, I forget. And Guy from that band went on to be in Fugazi, and when Fugazi played in Halifax later, you know this story, that they mentioned that they said, 10 years ago, some guys came down here from Nova Scotia and begged us to come and play, and now we're here, and we hope that they're here. But I wasn't there. I was living in Toronto. But my friends told me that they mentioned that and that they remembered us. And Beefeater, I missed them by a day in Ottawa. I remember they played there. And our band Spent was, we had our bass player, Gordon Krieger, who went on to as you know, Brave New Waves. He was very into Doug E. Bird's bass styles, lots of slapping and popping, not very good. Snakes, I don't know, but I call the Deadly Snakes the Snakes, but that's not them. Dag Nasty, I saw in 1986 with their third singer, Peter Kortner. And my friend Chris Murphy and I went back to interview Brian Baker after the show. Did I ever tell you this story? Went to interview him after the show with a tape recorder, but we really just wanted to meet him, and we were asking him questions, and he was saying that he really liked the first David Lee Roth solo record, Eat 'Em and Smile, and we couldn't believe it, and we thought he must have been joking, but he was serious.
Because he ended up in Junkyard.
That's right. And I have an autographed Junkyard CD that I stole from Geffen with Brian Baker's autograph. But then later, the next year in 88, I went and I went to some show. I think I went to see Shudder to Think. No, not Shudder to Think. I met Shudder to Think, though, on their first 7-inch in D.C. But I saw, where are they, Soulside, track 22. I saw Soulside, and I remember I met, there was a huge motorcycle craze. Brian Baker was also in the band The Meat Men, and he was on the album War of the Superbikes, and I believe Lyle Pressler was in that band, too, also of Minor Threat. And they all wore all leather suits and rode, like, big motorbikes. And I remember they were all parked outside the shows. And Embrace, I saw that band Embrace with Ian MacKay. And Egg Hunt was Ian MacKay.
What was
as
that
well.
Like?
Embrace, I don't think it was that good. I didn't like it.
Where'd you
much.
See them? Was this a game in D.C.?
Yeah, and you know what?
How many gigs did you see there when you went there for this little 2-week pilgrimage in 86 or 87? I'm saying 86 or 87 because you don't even know what date it was.
Well, I know it was 87 and 88, but I don't remember what shows I saw what year. I remember I saw Agent Orange, I saw Rollins Band, I saw Sonic Youth, I saw the Meat Puppets, I saw Soulside. I saw Embrace, I saw Happy Go Licky, I saw Scream with Dave Grohl. We waited an extra week to see Scream play. We were about to go home, and we were like, wait, Scream's playing in a week. And we stayed an extra week in the 40-degree heat, sleeping in the van, so we could see Scream play for half an hour, and they played covers.
Ba-boom!
Yes, I'm still going down this list of bands. I'm Chris Murphy, as you remember. I know I've been talking for a long time. Yes, so Fire Party was an all-girl band that I saw, and I remember I still have their set list at home. If anybody wants that, they can. I can either photocopy it, or if they want to send me some money, I'll give it to them. And Ignition was Alec MacKay, Ian's brother's second band, and he was originally in the band Faith, and I think he was in Ignition as well. I didn't think they were that great. And Three, as I said, worst album cover of all time, I think it's called Thong, and it's tied for Van Halen Balance for worst record cover of all time.
Now, what does it look like?
It has a guy, sort of a devil playing a fiddle, but then computer-generated instead of like the body of a goat, like a devil with a goat's body, it's like cousin it or something. It's like just a giant hand.
It's called Thong?
I think it's called Thong or something like that. Anyway, and Van Halen Balance, just as an aside, is Siamese Twins kind of things on a seesaw. Do you remember that record? Worst album cover ever. And also, just tying in, have you ever seen those ads lately with the armpit as a character? Like, it's an armpit with feet, and he's riding around, like, on a horse or whatever with some sexy chick. Do you find chicks sexy?
And you are Chris Murphy of the rock and roll band Sloan, continuing on, reading off lists of bands on the Discord box set.
Well, I think I've hit the high part of when I was sort of like heavy into punk. I know some of the earlier bands, but I wasn't around to see them. I loved Minor Threat.
Thank you for having an opinion on everything, Chris Murphy. This is great. Like, this, like, chucking you a box set and talk to me about this box set.
Well, I remember.
Talk to me about these questions from punk scenes years ago. Talk to me about playing Olympic Isle. This is great. Like, just talk to me about the insulation in this studio, Chris Murphy, if you could.
Do you think it's a bit indulgent? I've been talking for hours, eh?
I think this is just great. It's great to be able to learn about Chris Murphy from the rock and roll band Sloan. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all? When will you be back to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada? Well, you'll be on an Artwater Human Serviette radio show next week with your phone-in segment, but continuing on?
Well, I really want to make a new record, a new Sloan record, and Patrick just played me a bunch of his demos, and they're super heavy and electronic almost, and mine are all really breezy and acoustic, and I don't know how we're going to bridge that gap. But
sounds like the Prodigy.
Well, anyway... So we're also, we may be putting together like a best of type thing with a DVD in with it, which is proving to be kind of difficult because if it's just going to be a giveaway DVD, I don't want to give away everything we've ever done. I want to just do, if we're going to do like a best of kind of thing of just like all the songs that we have videos for example, I just want to put all our videos on a DVD and do some funny commentary and have that be enough. I don't want to have to give away everything of us, like.
But some early practices would be pretty neat, or those movies you made. You need some cool movies.
I don't want to put that on this. I want to put that on, like, are you familiar with, like, you know, like that really completist Weezer thing and stuff like that. Like, I want to do like a whole DVD, a really good one. If it's just like a bonus DVD that's free with a CD, I don't want to give away everything on it. But I do have lots and lots of stuff to do. Like, I have us doing silly skits and stuff, like the first time we came to Vancouver and stuff.
Well, thanks so much, Chris Murphy. I really appreciate you coming into the Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show 2 weeks in a row. 2 weeks in a row on a Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show. And thank you also for coming in 1991. And I don't mention my website too much on my radio show, but if you want to check out nardwuar.com, you can actually hear the first interview I ever did with Chris Murphy from 1991. 1992. Well, thanks so much, Chris Murphy. Why should people care about Chris Murphy and the rock and roll band Sloan?
Well, because, you know, it's hard to like a band necessarily straight through all of the records. We're going to be putting out hopefully our 8th record soon, and that's a hard thing to do. It's hard to keep your band together for that long. And it's, you know, I said earlier, either this week or last week, that, you know, I was a big U2 fan, and then they became too big, and everybody liked them, and then I couldn't like them anymore, and... But now, looking back, like I should have stayed with them, but I gave up on them because I was a kid and everybody liked them, and I didn't want to be like everybody else. But U2, I think, you know, I don't like all their records equally, but like I think they continue to do their best, and they're a band, and they split the money four ways, and I think that they're basically one of the best rock groups in the world. But
And we'll end on that note, but hopefully listeners will remember earlier on in the interview Chris's story about jamming with Daniel Lanois and
Snow.
It all comes back to Snow. Well, thanks so much, Chris. Keep on rocking in the free world and do-do-do-do-do.
Do-do-do.